Jeff and Scott with Sharing the Burden. We're live on 102.9 FM in Stouffville. To listen to us online, please go to whistlefm.com, 102.9. Make sure Stouffville's said there somewhere, and you'll find us. And if you don't know how to do it, it'll tell you how to do it. And I know, because without instruction, I'm nowhere, and I was able to pick up different shows over the years. So It works, folks. And we're talking about taking personal inventory, in other words, looking at ourselves, looking at the liabilities and the assets, probably daily, and doing something about the liabilities that seem to appear. You know, and the funny thing, over time, I don't know if you're like this, Jeff, but the more things I conquer in this life, the more that get exposed. So, you know, as I kind of get a handle on one thing, two other things come up. You know, so at the end of the day, and not only do I know that there's so much more that I don't know and probably will never know, but there's more things to look after. So, you know, youth and all these things. But, you know, with so-called wisdom, I believe, comes more situations that we need to look after. And one of the points in this reading, Helping Hands, here, it talks about there's great power in coming together. And most of my life was spent on my own. You know, I mean, we still did things together, lots of different people. But the reality for me was I was comfortable by myself without people, probably more comfortable than I was with people. I can remember as a young fellow saying, you know, I love my animals so much, really a lot more than people. And I remember feeling that way, and it's changed over time. But we as strong, I as, you know, somewhat weak. And I learned that we is important here for humans too, not just a spiritual sense of somebody greater and something greater, but other people. I need people today, and I know it. How were you growing up? Did you... You're a sociable guy anyway, I think. I don't know if you were always like that, but, you know.
Well, I'm a sociable person, but I'm actually fairly individualistic, too. I mean, I grew up, I have two older sisters, but they were old enough and sisters that I was more or less on my own as a boy. I was telling some folks, friends, the other day, I said, oh, I just remembered enjoying playing out the back in the yard when I was young. There was a neighbor friend, Bill, and he and I were the same age. We played together. It was just kind of fun, but it was, I was more or less on my own for a lot of years. And, you know, I enjoyed that, but I am social too. That's an interesting thing, being both things, that kind of person who is sociable, but there's often times when I think I've had enough socializing and I want to be on my own. But that's probably the normal average person who says that too. And I can't imagine with some jobs, I mean, people are just overwhelmed all the time and people pulling at you. I couldn't do a job like that where I'm constantly, and you feel like you have unfinished tasks all over the place because you get some of it answered or done, then you just can't finish off detail. You may be a poor person for writing out notes and things like that. So to finish it off, but that it is more, I have to, I kind of force myself to deal with and be with, in some ways, people. But socializing is easy. As you say, when you get into work groups where you're trying to help each other, then it is a bit more like work. You know, because you know that we're all there for dealing with, I'm dealing with this, not I'm not there to help you deal with something, although you may pick things up. I guess that's how it works. People that are listening and not being judged, then they're picking it up for themselves. They'll deal with that later. But when I'm there, I like interaction with people, and it is hard not to try and think how I could fix that situation. I know I have to keep my mouth shut and think, oh, I would just do this. But when I look in the mirror and say, you know, this is what I need to deal with, then I have to take that seriously, because sometimes I just think I can easily pass it off.
you know, like you say, the open-mindedness goes a long way. One of our
right
slogans is keep an open mind. And if I keep an open mind, everything is sort of okay.
Mm-hmm.
It could be me. You know what I mean?
Yes. Could be.
It could be. We hope it's not, but it certainly could be.
I find that, you know, the whole, to me, the Christian message is, you know, people will say whatever it is that they think of a Christian, a person who's a Christian, there's an image that we all have, whatever that might be. But ultimately, if you read, especially in the New Testament, what Jesus was saying over and over again is more or less, there's, each of us have weakness. I have a weakness or weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what God really only expects is that I confess that. I say it to him. And when we were raising our children, we did something with the young, when they were young, we basically said when they were little, yes, daddy. So whenever a child, when we wanted them to do something, so any one of our children, my wife and I would say, yes, mommy, or yes, they have to say that literally out of their mouth to us. And especially our one daughter, she really had a tough time because in her mind, she knew as soon as she said that, she had to do it. It was actually a moral thing for a child to act, really say something, yes, I will do this, or no, I won't do this, you know, but yes, daddy. And as soon as that was said, then it was actually fastened in her thinking. And so I believe that God, because we're like children to him, when I actually say yes, daddy, to him, that I was this or wrong, but I'm actually saying it to him in my mind, I'm confessing, that's really saying he's right and I know I'm wrong, and I have now, what he says then is I forgive you. And because that's so profound, then that is the true message of the Christian gospel. The message is, you know, just that. Because that is really more humbling than anything else. And so that's what I find. I can get made right better and quicker if I go more quickly to that and admit that. I may still do it again, but he doesn't hold that into my future. He forgives me for now. And then over time I change and for the better. That's what I find, for the better. And so that's very profound. Sounds simple.
Well, we'll leave that for others to do. I'm just kidding you, Jeff. One of the things that's interesting as you're talking about, especially the kids, you know, saying yes daddy, yes mommy, and when they didn't say that, or you know, had a hard time saying that. I mean, can you really, I don't know, would punishment come into it at that point? I mean, what I'm getting at here is, if I feel shamed by having to say something, you know, that's totally against who I think I am, then what do I do?
When they're little children. So before, when they're still in innocence, this is the innocence of a child, because they actually don't see the possibility of saying no. So what they're actually realizing, and because we weren't mean parents, we were asking them to do something good for them, and respectful of us or whatever it would be. Sometimes even small things, but it could be a behavioral type of thing, and I can't think of a specific off the top of my head, but you know, we didn't use it all the time, but because it was so profound to the child, like they would just say yes daddy. I still remember our daughter saying yes daddy and tears would squirt out of her eyes. It was so much, you know, she just squirt, and it was almost humorous to us because, you know, it wasn't a big deal really, but because we were just making her say yes to something that needed to be done, clean up your room, let's say, they already had fun, but now it's time to clean it up and they want to move on to doing something else. Well, no, we're stopping now. So, cause I'm not going to clean it up. You made the mess. You're going to clean it up. Yeah. You had fun doing this. And then this is a time, like you can't just jump to the next thing.
Yeah.
and create another mess. So that's really what an adult needs to hear is stop, think about my responsibility, say yes, because when you're an adult, this won't happen anymore. Yeah. It only happens in childhood. So that's why our children have grown up, in a sense, fairly responsible young adults now. They're in their 20s, all of them, four of them. And so they have to make choices. I can't be there to say, do this now, Hillary. And she won't say, yes, daddy, because she's 24. So when they were young, it was possible. Now they have to see those things as adults and stop and clean up a mess, even if someone else doesn't want it. So,
well, they can say no now, but then they have to suffer the consequences of daddy's wrath.
Well,
that you would get mad.
Yes, but, just the responsibilities out there. You can just wander on from those and leave a mess behind. But then someone's got to deal with it, right? So they learned young some pretty strong principles, and I think they'll carry them on for the rest of their lives. Yeah. Still not perfect choices, but I realize now fundamentally that was started then in innocence. And now when we do get older, we know how to get around things and manipulate situations. But really, sometimes we just kind of have to go tell myself, stop, this is what I'm doing. Really, I'm trying to manipulate this other person to do what I want, or whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
Deal with it and be a responsible person.
Yeah.
I think that's really what it comes down to.
Responsibility. Yeah, you're right. Commitment, responsibility.
Yeah.
Looking at my part or your part in whatever, that's, I think, the issue oftentimes. What is my part in this and what is her part or his part? How should I be responsive or reactive, which is never good. You used the word stop a couple times. That's my favorite slogan. Mm. And it was never a slogan until we developed it in the jails when we were talking about all those different, one-liners that are so wise, but for the grace of God, live and let live, and things like that. How important is it, when you're going to do something or react in a certain way? And all wisdom, all wise sayings and so on. But if you're angry, or you're becoming angry or emotional, and the temperature's going up, then there's only one thing you can do, in my opinion, to change the outcome. That's to stop. Mm. That's to stop Scott, stop Jeff from moving ahead in an emotional state, because any decisions, any conversations, any words, any reactivity that comes as a result of emotions is not right.
Mm.
It's not even really me. It's me plus anger, me plus excitement, me plus whatever. So so I need to do that stop thing, move away somehow, physically, maybe emotionally, maybe financially, I don't know. But in some way, I've got to move out of that situation until I regain what seems like a balanced sort of emotionalism, emotional sobriety, if you want. Mm. And we use sobriety a lot in the program to express these things.
I remember, actually, here's a interest. I don't know how this fits exactly, but on Sunday at church, they had a intro video of a guy. So 100 years ago, they were learning to fly, or just over 100 years ago. And this guy, so it's old black and white footage, and there's a man standing on a beam at the bottom of the Eiffel Tower. But he's still something like 150 feet off the ground, and there's men standing there and telling him to jump because he's got this cape sort of thing on that they're learning to fly, right? So it's the early stages of flight for man. And so this guy just has this cape on, and so you see him pause, and he's looking down thinking that's a long way to go to jump, but if this cape works, he'll fly. Okay. So the two men that are standing there beside him, you don't even hear because there's silent movie era, but there's actual footage of this. And so the fellow's looking down thinking, should I jump, because I'm gonna fly, but can I fly? So there's this question, as you just said, there's a point where, am I going to really make a fatal or a bad decision here? Or am I going to not make, if this won't be so bad after all. And so this guy pauses, you know, you have almost a minute of him looking down thinking, and it just, you just wait, but there's all this pressure because there's film footage showing, okay, if you don't do this, then you're going to be embarrassed. But he does jump and he does crash, and it's not a good landing. So like you just said, sometimes thinking it through and saying, no, I shouldn't do this. Yeah. The bottom line is, even if other people are telling me to do it or join in the party here, because the results could be ongoing, life-lasting, bad news, whatever it is. And there's times where we say, don't do it. And we don't or shouldn't.
And, you know, the humility for that fella to have backed off, like, that would have been the answer. You know, and it almost looked like maybe he was going to, and I... thinking in my mind, well, yeah, after all, I would not even going to see the guy crash or whatever, you know. But, you know, I'm not thinking to hurt the guy, but, you know, we've got to see this act of whatever it's going to be, you know. And if it didn't happen, there'd be some disappointment, but the guy would have made the right decision. He was obviously frightened stiff, so he was emotional, and then he couldn't make a proper decision, so he just went for it and probably died by the looks of it.
Didn't seem good
to go into the ground even, but... you know, like a nail or something. Anyway, another note totally. Cannabis. Cannabis and fentanyl. What the heck could cannabis and fentanyl have in common? You know, and fentanyl is the drug that killed my son and many, 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 many other people since. To the point today where, and you know this too, Jeff, we go into jails, especially the ladies' jail out there, and people have been brought back 10, 12, 15 times. They're dead, gone, and they're brought back. You know, somebody has the kit to inject them or nasal spray and bring them back, you know, at the last second. And yet they can't wait to go out again. Now, what could that possibly have to do with cannabis? Well, think about, you know, what addiction or dependency really is, what it's like, how it starts, where does it come from. Look at liquor, look at alcohol, look what it's done to families, look what it's done to the world. Look at the people who are affected by the people who abuse it. And I understand there's only about 38% of the world who actually drink, use alcohol. So, you know, there's obviously, 62 who don't. But of the ones that do, the numbers that use a lot versus the numbers that don't use so much is heavy. And there's big time addiction, big time dependency in the world of alcohol, and those affected by it, they somewhere between 5 and 10 people who have a problem with the stuff affect other people in serious ways. So a lot of people affected, so that's the bottom line. And and a lot of busted up families, traffic accidents over the years, just a mess, you know. And nobody, when they decided to have that first sip of something, ever thought they would ever get to a point where they, you know, couldn't see straight and couldn't stop doing the stuff. And so nobody knows who has this propensity or this leaning, this compulsive kind of a personality that's going to turn into a dependency or an addiction. So, you know, where you start has little to do with where you end up. Now, you take a relatively new drug, in a sense, new for legality anyway, new for legal, you know, purposes. And we say, okay, well, here's this cannabis, here's a joint, here's some hashish, and so on and so forth. And now we found, since there was a possibility of not only adding something and making it legal recreationally, but making it legal as a help drug, as something that's going to cure things, pain, for instance, and only since the recreational aspect looked like it might come forward, it did 100 derivatives of marijuana kind of come out of the woodwork, and all of a sudden there's all kinds of medications and forms of oil and, you know, less THC and more CBD, et cetera. You don't have to get high, or you can only get a little bit high by playing with these. But What does it mean for that person who had or has the propensity to develop what the experts in the World Health Organization call dependency syndrome? Who is going to develop that? Who is going to actually have a disease that will not allow them to stop oftentimes before they die? Hmm. And they will go from one drug to another drug. So the open doors was here. Have a harmful joint, because we all do, and not to worry. Well, one particular example, I quit drinking anything about 12, 15 years ago. And I liked wine. I liked to drink wine with my meals and so on. And I was not any sort of problem drinker. But because I worked with young people so much in the world of addiction, and if they liked me and liked my lifestyle, their questions were always the same at some point. Well, do you use this? Mm. Do you drink alcohol? And I couldn't lie, because I just, you know, I believe what you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear a word you're saying anyway. So if I was to lie, they wouldn't know, you know, why are these vibes not feeling like the message and so on. So anyway, I couldn't lie. For that reason, I gave it up, because I would not be that trigger or that starting point for somebody who, you know, and anybody who comes out of the background's got a 1 in 2 chance of having the propensity and the leaning, the genetic flaw, and becoming an addict of some kind. I'm not going to give that guy his first drink or his first puff. You take, as I say, what alcohol has done, and now you take it over here and make something else legal that is a mind-bending formula for escapism of some sort, more minor or less physical damage. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. But for the guy who's just going to start his trip with that as a stepping stone and end up like my son Sean did on fentanyl 20 years later and dead, who knows who's going to apply, who's going to fall into that, you know? And that is what people don't seem to understand, you know? And like when you think of that, and I mean, you're not, you know, you're not into any of those things yourself. I know you're not. But you do get a hint of it when you come into the jails, especially. You know, when you see or listen to what some of these girls have been through, you must have a sense of, yeah, it's kind of foreign to me because I'm not brought up in it. My children aren't into it, but you can see how serious it is. And that's where it starts.
Yeah.
Innocent cigarette.
I think it's a huge issue or issues, we're not going to come to any answers, resolutions with our meeting, but I know... You basically, each person or parent maybe has to make a decision how they're going to do the whole alcohol and now cannabis thing, because young people, as soon as you tell them, some young people will say, now I'm going to do it. If you say don't, I'm going to do it. So a parent can be damned if they do, damned if they don't, because they're trying hard, responsibly, trying not to let their children get into bad scenarios or bent out of shape situations, right? So if you said, oh, just take a bit of it, then like you just said, they're going to open a door to, and each person's different. Some will go to extremes. Like people, there are people that jump from, they're dragsters, they're not, or they're sprinters, not long distance runners. They have to have it all right now and then blast off, right? And versus, oh yeah, I could just measure this out and do this over periods of time. So but when I just thought, when we were trying to raise our kids, they realized I didn't drink. So I didn't have anything in the house, and I didn't have anything in a liquor cabinet or the fridge, no beer in the fridge. And then it would become to the place, once you have teenagers, well, why don't you drink? And so I say, why I don't. It wasn't because I have any addiction problem. I wasn't really interested, and it doesn't appeal to me flavor-wise or the effect of it. But then they're thinking or seeing other families where it is in their home, but it's not a big deal. You know, they just can have a drink, a glass of this or a shot of that. Mm-hmm. And so that wasn't a big deal. So they kind of are trying to figure out how that should work. But I just thought, you know what? I'm not afraid of the drink. I'm not interested, and I might as well not have it here because I don't want to look like I have it. Mm-hmm. But your kids still wonder, the whole, well, it's not so bad and why not and all this. And, you know, it's just not easy to, even if I had it, let's say, it'd just be sitting there getting old for the most part. So there's no perfect way to introduce or do this with kids or young people. I don't think at all. But it's challenging. So there's not a good answer for that, but, you mm-hmm. know, kind of there with that issue right now, I suppose, with this whole.
Well, the other thing, Jeff, I think, education is always, you know, a key to a lot of these things. I think if the kids were educated on, you know, the numbers, you know, we'd have to come up with some raw numbers of people who would turn and become dependent on something versus those who don't. But I think if that was very clear, and it was very clear that a certain percentage, and a lot more than people would realize, of people who start on this journey will die from it. And if they don't die from it, they're probably going to be a very sick, you know, mental, emotional illness, as well as physical, depending on the type of drug. And over time, it's not going to do anything positive. So, you know, and I mean, it's sold and not sold, but explained in such a way that you're better off to never have your, you know, we're not going to tell you can't, because you can. I mean, it's legal. You become a certain age, you can do what you want. But know that if you look in your family background, and it doesn't matter how many generations may be missing, if you find some alcoholism or some drug addiction or something, in the past, it's a good idea not to take that thing, not to start on that road, you know. And really, once you do, if you have that propensity, you have no idea when you're going to cross that line and the compulsions are going to become a dependency that it takes on a life of its own and gains control of your life. You know, in Scripture, we call similar things idolatry. You know, I never understood that when I was younger. But something you want more than anything else, you know, more than your God or whatever you believe in, then you got a problem. I mean, you're into the world of compulsion at best and raw addiction at worst. So dangerous, and just to introduce it in such a way that it's, oh, you can do so many good things with it. I think it's a big mask, you know, and and I'm, you know, obviously be a lot of tax money earned over the years with that stuff too.
Yes, so that's a big deal for there. Well, I know I still remember when I was young, my mother was very concerned about my dad's interests that had started at some point in drinking because he was a happy drunk. So when they had parties in their neighborhood, just when we were little, he would be the fellow that the neighbors wanted to him to drink, because then he had a natural way to tell a joke or say something funny. So they all thought that was a blast dad got a few drinks in him. So there are people that turn into that. But the problem was, the next day, my mom had to deal with the man who woke up that morning. And I know she wasn't very happy about that, because I could just still remember something. I mean, I don't know what happened with some of that, but I know he wasn't the best guy the next day.
Yeah.
And so that's what a family lives with.
Yeah.
So she really wanted to cut that off. And so at some point it worked. He did, you know, cut all that back. And I don't even know why, but there could be any number of reasons, right?
Well, he was able, though. That's the main thing.
Yes.
You know. Anyway, Jeff, hang on to those thoughts. We're going to take another break before we start to stretch home. And Jay is going to probably give us a bit of a song, I guess. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's time for a song. And here's a song all about friendship. The Beatles, with a little help from my friends, here on Sharing the Burden on Whistle FM.
Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get by.